Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. In this episode, we shop for a processor for the Maximus 12 formula and explore some of the challenges of playing old games on modern hardware. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McKinney. Darren, I was going through some of my stuff. It's part of the hardware vault categorization and looking to see what I've collected because, you know, some of it's kind of fuzzy. I mean, I pulled a box down with a whole bunch of video cards in it, and I honestly forgot I had a couple of those.
Well, yeah, you do have a lot of boxes.
I do, and it's fun. I like going through this stuff, and every few years I go through and we'll get rid of some of the duplicates, some of the ones that are not necessarily my build worthy or might be too much effort to set up. Like the Gigabyte Waterforce motherboards, they're super awesome. They have that full coverage water block.
Yeah, they're very sexy.
But unless they are going to a show and it's going to show off some stuff, they're not really worth me putting together so I can play games in the corner and never see it again.
Right.
I was going through and I found the Maximus Formula 12, Maximus 12 Formula, one of those two, which you expressed some interest in.
Oh, yeah. That's the one with that pretty EK water block system.
Yeah. So you have the water-cooled VRM and then EK sent over a water block and then the bridge connector that will connect the water block with the water-cooled VRM to create an entire multi-segmented water block over top of it with some RGB. And this is a build that I showcased for the YouTube channel.
Right.
So I'll link that down below so you can go and check it out. It's actually kind of one of the silent builds that just kind of shows the process of putting it together. It was really fun. But since there's this this chip shortage, you know, right. some sort of thing about
they can't, believe me, I know.
Can't make anything. I didn't get any of the Z590 motherboards to review. And as I've been told, really, aside from PCI Express 4.0, there wasn't a lot that changed. So I'm not upset. But we need to do something. We need a project.
Yeah. In fact, I've been itching for one myself because, ironically, I've been playing Battlefield 5, it seems like, so long now, that I've been looking for something new. And as you know, we've dipped our toes a little bit in VR, and it's cool, but it's not scratching that itch. So I was thinking, maybe a PlayStation 5?
Ooh, PlayStation 5.
Could be fun.
I haven't heard a lot about that, but
Well, no one has because you can't get them because the shortage is affecting not just the processors, but the video that's in them too. Yeah, I practically have to win the lottery to get one. I know, I've been trying. But and I don't even have a great excuse other than it would just be fun to get some of these next generation games that right now are coming out for these new consoles.
Oh, well, but I guess good luck.
Yeah, it's not meant to be.
Yeah.
So building a new machine sounds really appealing.
New video card then?
Well, if we could get one, yeah. Right? Now, I know that we've talked about this in the previous podcast, so it's worth checking out. But the shortage is really driven by the mining right now. Mm-hmm. And NVIDIA says that they're going to fix that.
Well, there's a promise.
And I think it's going to happen in the next generation cards that we've speculated about.
Yeah.
The TIE cards or whatever they're going to be.
Yeah.
Supers. I don't know what the next generation is.
Well, there's a podcast link in the bottom. Go check it out.
Yeah. So go check that out. But that doesn't matter because I can't get even a current generation card and maybe that will change.
Yeah. It's kind of this price versus supply versus what do we want to get rid of sort of thing.
So I think you got a great idea. Let's get maybe a cool system. Mm-hmm. Let's do a little hermit crab action on some of the pieces of my current machine.
Oh, yeah.
And let's build on that. But we need to keep some budget aside for video cards when they come available. Maybe a 3080 tire, 30, I don't know, something, right?
Darn that Darren and his budgets. Jeez.
So longtime listeners, I should disclaimer, we'll know now that I am always about best bang for your buck and what we can get away with the budget. So we're starting already with a very pricey motherboard that fortunately we already have.
Yep.
And that means we're committing to a water cooling setup, which might mean some more water cooling stuff needs to be purchased.
Well, we could do like what we did with your first water cooling build. It was, you know, a water cooling project, right? So we put in some Thermaltake premium water cooling gear, and that grew over time to the point where you had water-cooled GPU, and then you replaced that one with another one with this fancy EK block, and then you added another one, so you had two NSLI.
Right.
And so, then, yeah.
Yeah, well, so let's give an update on that. So very, well, not so recently now, but it feels recent. Yep. I was able to score a 2070 Super. And so we put that in the machine. Yeah, and at the time, you couldn't get a great aftermarket water block. No. So what do? We pulled out the hardcore tubing that we had in there and went with a more traditional block.
Well, we went with an AIO. I know. It's kind of boring, but for the what Darren did, and we weren't really going out to LAN parties and showing off the build. So, you know.
Obvious reasons.
Yeah. So you put in an AIO. It cools just as well as a DIY with less effort. I mean, there are some downsides.
A little bit more noise, but not a ton.
No. And it so far, it's worked great, right?
Yeah. And of course, very self-contained. But if we're going to go back to this beautiful motherboard with the full EKA layered block system, I think we got to go back to another hard tube.
Yes.
Got to leave a little budget there, I think is where we're coming from. Yep. If we move the video card over and we hermit crab power supply, maybe, I don't know, we got some power supplies laying around.
Oh, we shouldn't worry about that. What we really need to focus on is the heart of the system.
Okay. So let's talk about that. Because if I give you a budget, I know you can get pretty crazy with an Intel processor right now. Mm-hmm. But let's leave some on the table for a video card, which could cost, you know, $1,200. I'm hoping more like $600 or $700 when they finally get the miners back out of the way.
$600 or $700.
So let's bring the budget back down. Let's set it what I would normally do, and let's say sub $400.
Oh,
just to make it a challenge.
So Celeron?
No. So I know you can on that motherboard supports. Was it Kaby Lake?
No.
Comet Lake. God, I knew I'd get it.
It's kind of the same.
But the newer processors are Rocket Lake, right?
Yes. So those are that's the 11 series and supports the PCI Express 4. And really the biggest difference on the surface is that with Comet Lake, the Core i9s had 10 cores and the Core i9s on Rocket Lake have 8 cores. So Intel said, hey, those 10 cores really made the processor too hot and we had to actually release a new cryo cooler to keep them in check. So let's not do that again.
So I'm going to further shake the tree a little bit because I know you would go right for the i9 super unlocked K edition black or whatever.
Friends don't let friends buy not K or i9s.
All right. But right now the hardware is so far ahead of software. Can we agree?
Yes.
So
do we need it? No.
No. So in order to keep it budget friendly, we don't necessarily have to have an unlocked processor and we'll do light overclocking, if any. And we'll consider this a bridge PC, right?
Yeah, actually, if you don't do K, you will not do any overclocking.
Ah, there is that. Yeah. Well, we can overclock the future video card maybe someday.
Yeah, but you don't need to.
And the memory?
Despite Hardware Asylum being based off of overclocking and us saying overclocking is the next generation of everything that you have to do with your PC, the truth is, my PC is not overclocked. My daily driver is not overclocked.
And that's so funny because I don't competitive overclock and my daily driver is overclocked, although granted modestly, because I get nervous about it under my desk.
But the thing is, the video cards, any video card you buy, modern one, is going to have this boost technology that is going to maximize the power of the GPU, you know, to the point where it's beyond the boost clock and give you the maximum amount of performance for the amount of power it's going to consume. Any overclocking on top of that is usually within the boost range, so you're not overclocking the card at all. So why bother?
I agree. And I'm going to come clean. I picked under 400 because I really believe that that's where the sweet spot is today for performance versus budget.
I would agree because that's solid Core i7 range.
Okay. So let's talk about it here. And let's use real, and I hate to quote prices, but let's do it for this one. Let's talk about what you can do today under 700 and the pros and cons. Because all right. I really feel like there are a lot of options.
Okay, well, let's set some context.
Okay.
We are on newegg.com. The date, as of right now, is May 26, 2021.
So, yep, subject to change, as always.
But we have to have that as a line in the sand so that these prices make sense. Otherwise, I am of the opinion that we never quote prices, which is why there's not prices on Hardware Asylum.
Exactly.
I basically did a search for processors, narrowed it down to Intel desktops, and it has to be sold by Newegg.
Yep, we want something legit, clean. We don't have to worry about a third-party vendor. And if something goes wrong, you know, at least you can go back to Newegg.
Hey, yeah, Newegg's good like that. And I have it sorted by feature items. So this is really sorted by what's popular, what's being sold right now. And we have, believe it or not, an Intel Core i7-11700K Rocket Lake 8-core processor against an Intel Core i7-10700KA Comet Lake 8-core processor.
Oh, well, I would have thought the KA would be more expensive. Isn't that the big fancy unlocked one?
Well, the K is the unlocked one. The KA stands for something that doesn't have something. I don't know what it is.
Oh, but, Avengers Special Edition, though. That's got to bring absolutely nothing to the table. But it's interesting.
The box is cool.
It is cool, but it doesn't even come with a game.
It's not included, but once you register your processor, you can download the game.
Which game is that?
Some adventure games.
Oh, the Avengers Assemble thing?
Yeah.
All right, maybe that's not worth advertising. I get it now.
Well, anyhow, we have the Rocket Lake, which you get Death Stranding game bundle, Intel gift with purchase, limited time offer.
What is the Intel gift, I wonder?
Well, it's Death Stranding. It's a game.
All right. Okay. We're looking really $329 for a 10700KA. Mm-hmm. Or $399.99. So you're really one penny away from my budget. I see what you've done there. With the Aaron, leave no pennies on the table.
No.
With the 11700K Rocket Lake. So Comet Lake versus Rocket Lake. So, all right. Now I got to stop and have you tell me, why do I not want one of these processors? What's the difference between Comet Lake and Rocket Lake?
The PCI Express. The graphics processor, we have graphics 360 on the Comet Lake. We have graphics 750 on the Rocket Lake, both of which you will never use.
I will never use, so that's okay.
And on top of that, we have PCI Express 4.0 versus 3.0. Well,
that sounds cool.
Rocket Lake is the processor that was released for the Z590, which is a platform I have not tested yet.
Right. And but they're hard to get because the chip shortage.
Exactly. And shipping and a whole lot of stuff.
And more expensive.
Uh-huh. And the motherboard has a BIOS flash to support Rocket Lake processors because the socket is physically the same right. Power, same layout. But for the effort, if we can get a Comet Lake cheaper, we have the same TDP, which is the thermal design power, because you like me to say that.
Yep.
And they both offer 125 watts TDP. So they're going to require the same cooler.
That's nice. And what I see here is 3.6 versus 3.8. So it looks, at least at this level, like the Comet Lake is faster.
Yes.
For
less money. Although, if I remember correctly with the KAs, I mean, they're unlocked. Both of these processors will boost beyond the 3.8 gigahertz range as long as they remain cool.
That makes sense.
They work the same way as GPUs. So we have this boost. As long as they're cool, they will run fast. And with 8 cores, it's going to generate less heat, so it actually should run a lot faster.
Okay, so we got 10700 Ka.
Ka. K-A.
I think that's a Vegas show versus 11700K, but that's not the whole list. So
no, we got
a lot. What are our other options?
Well, we got Core i5s. This is a 10600K Comet Lake 6-core.
Oh, that's a huge drop in price, though.
Well, and we're losing 2 cores plus 2 cores of hyper-threading. And you currently have an LGA 2066 processor with 6 cores, I believe.
Right.
So this is really kind of from the core standpoint, it's a
rough equivalent.
It's a rough equivalent, which is... Yeah,
okay. So I can see that doesn't really appeal to me. If you're going to go, you want to at least get a performance boost. But the price is appealing, $223.99,
you know, because that penny. And then we have the K edition of the Comet Lake Core i7, which is, I don't know, KA versus A. Maybe the A is Avengers. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
We're going to skip that, though. The Rocket Lake i5 is $258.99.
So, all right, a little bit more. And that's the K also, right? The unlocked?
Yep. And much like with the Core i7, we also have a drop in frequency. So Comet Lake will boost up to 4.1 gigahertz and beyond. And the Rocket Lake is only at 3.9 gigahertz. Does 200 megahertz really make a difference? No.
Well, yeah, but for the difference in price, maybe it does.
Yeah, a little bit. But really what we're looking for is the non-K additions.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So here we go. Down here, maybe it's the fifth or sixth one on the page, at least at the time of us looking at it, we have the Intel Core i9, 10900, not K, Comet Lake 10-core 2.8 gigahertz LGA processor. It's a 65-watt part, and it's only at $379.99.
Ooh, so we're getting the i9 for, well, pretty close to the i7K processor price.
But there's a couple of things that make this not appealing.
Okay.
So the K Edition processors, which is why I always suggest them, they have a larger default clock. So the 10900K is actually a 3.4 or 3.6 gigahertz part.
Okay.
The non-K edition is 2.8 gigahertz. So we have a 10-core 2.8. We have more multi-threading performance, which will increase your games, make them go faster. But remember in a previous podcast, I talked about how clock speed is king when it comes to frame rates?
Exactly.
So we want to make sure that we have the highest frame rate available. This particular processor is probably not a good one, regardless of the price.
Oh, well, that's good to know, because I was thinking i9 for $379 is very appealing.
Yeah. Now, right next to it, we have a Core i5-10600KF, which is also a locked processor. I'm not sure what the F stands for. Maybe it's fine. But it's also a 6-core clocked at 4.1 gigahertz at $200.
Wow, crazy cheap.
Crazy cheap.
That leaves a lot of money on the table.
$200.
Yeah.
Let's see. If we go down a little bit more, I want to find the i7 non-K edition, and I thought it was on this page.
Oh, now you're into refurbished land. Oh, what? No, there we go.
All right. Now we have the Core i7-10700 Comet Lake 8-core 2.9 gigahertz processor. This is also a 65-watt part because it doesn't have that overclocked boost added to it. And we're $284.99. This gives you 3 gigahertz of power, which is plenty much for gaming. And it's only, what, 800 less than the K edition? But you save yourself $100.
Nice. Okay. So $284. Wow. It's on sale. Woohoo.
Yep. I'm looking for the Rocket Lake unlocked, but it seems to be not very popular because it's really down here on the page. Or out of stock, one of the two.
Well, let's see. Comets, lots of comets. I saw a copy like go by. That's sort of weird.
Yeah, there was a lot of really popular old processors in here.
So there's a...
These are out of stock.
Yeah, we're definitely out of stock, which is, again, part of the chip shortage. I think we're probably going to find those are the only options today because I think everything as we go down now is out of stock.
Yep. So we are at the whim of what's in stock at Newegg right now, and it appears that the popular processors that we have to choose from are some i9s and i7s.
With that in mind, let's compare a couple of these because I think you've got my interest peaked in the 10700KA, but I want to know if we stretch the budget just a little bit. The next step up looks like it's that i9-10900 not K.
Yeah, which has a lower processor speed.
So let's see what we get for our extra $50, or if it's worth the stretch here. Let's compare these things because.
All right, so I want the 10700KA. Click that. Mm-hmm. Scroll down. Scroll. Oh, yeah, here it is.
Hit the compare button. There you go. Okay.
All right.
It's so very helpful.
We have. Wow. I've never done a compare products on Newegg. This is kind of cool.
Well, you usually know exactly what you're looking for.
Yeah. All right. So we're just going to go down the line because it's listing all the specs side by side. So we have, it's in stock. Yes. Yay.
Woo.
Brand Intel, processor type desktop, 10th gen versus 10th gen. Yeah. Because we're 1070s here.
Right. Both Comet Lakes, right?
Yep. Both Comet Lakes. We have 8-core versus 10-core. We already talked about that. Threads, double that, obviously. Operating frequency, 3.8 gigahertz on the 1070 or 10700 and 2.8 on the 10900, which we talked about.
Yeah.
This is the interesting thing. And we have the max boost frequency. And boost is dependent on how cool you can keep a processor.
Well, yeah, okay.
So we have 5.1 on the 10700. That seems logical. And we have 5.2 on the Core i9, which also seems logical, but...
But they're practically the same. So it looks like the 329 processor is giving me... Well, I'm losing 2 cores, but the performance numbers look pretty dang identical.
Yeah, pretty close.
So what am I missing here?
Well, let's keep going. Okay. We have a level 3 cache of 16 megs versus 20 megs. This is important for the speed of getting data in and out of your processor. So if you have a game that relies on processor speed, this is going to give you more. manufacturing, we don't care about. Hyper-threading, we don't care about. Memory type is the same. So it's DDR4 at 2933.
Yeah, no, I've got some nice RAM on the shelf, so we're good there.
Graphics are the same. Bum, bum, bum. PCI Express. Oh, hey. This is something that we mentioned before, but the thermal design power. So we have the 10700K. By enabling that overclocking support, it boosts up the TDP to 125 watt. Now, the non-K edition is a 65 watt part, which okay. means that it's going to operate cooler, and with a less capable heat sink, it's always going to be on boost. So that means it's going to be running at 5.2 almost every time it needs to have processing power.
Well, we definitely are going to give it a huge amount of cooling, so that makes sense to me.
Yeah, well, even with the cooling we have, the 125 watt part's going to remain chilled enough that it's going to run fast.
So for $50. Let me just clarify here. So if I'm understanding correctly, we're getting a cooler processor that has more cores and more cache.
More cache and an extra 100 megahertz in boost. Potential speed, basically.
Potential speed, which isn't too bad. So that's going to benefit really in a lot of different ways. So your $50 there, I don't know if that is worth leaving on the table.
Yeah, that's $50 is what? Going to lunch four times?
Yeah, it's a date at the movies, essentially, right?
Yeah.
Knock on wood. Maybe your mileage may vary depending on what part of the world you're in.
And who your date is.
It's interesting to me also that the i9-10900 non-K comes with a heatsink and a cooler, and the KA doesn't.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I wonder if we could find a bare bones 10900K and save a little more money too. That might be worth the hunt.
Oh yeah, that would be. We're looking for a tray processor. Those are hard to find.
Yeah, and with that being the case, it's 5% off with free shipping, and yeah.
I think you have a lot to think about.
Absolutely. This has been a great discussion, but I think really getting the higher generation without the K makes sense for this PC. So I'm going to mull over the budget, and I think we'll probably get that build going sometime soon.
A couple episodes back, we talked about a motherboard from 1995. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're talking about the retro motherboards.
Yeah, a little bit. This was the Pentium Pro that I got from a coworker, and I did a video about it. It was actually the first Hardware Asylum Vault video.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And it was kind of a, you know, how am I going to do these videos and what needs to be in it and is it really going to be interesting? And as I was putting that machine together, I was like, well, I need a way to test it.
Well, yeah, you need to benchmark it, right? But you can't run the latest Cinebench, I'm sure.
No, or even the latest Sandra. Although I found an old version of Sandra that ran. And all of it is based off of, well, what operating system can I install? And am I going to be able to get drivers to actually interface with it? Because a lot of that stuff has gotten lost to time.
Oh, I didn't think about that. I'm so used to the drivers just being available.
Well, yeah, Windows 10 makes it really nice. Although Windows 10 actually got rid of a lot of this old stuff. So even if I wanted to install Windows 10 on a Pentium Pro, I don't think it would run. But it doesn't actually support a lot of like the PCI bus stuff. It doesn't have any of those drivers in it. So it really wouldn't do anything.
Which
is unfortunate. And they even removed some of the old hard drive controllers. And, you know, as computers advance, of course, you got to get rid of the stuff that's obsolete.
Can't support everything.
No. Well, when I was putting that machine together, my goal was to play Quake 1.
Okay.
And as you remember, playing Quake 1 back in the day required a 3D accelerator because if you ran it off of just regular graphics, it had a lot of demand on the CPU. And you got like maybe 10 frames a second.
So now refresh my memory, which video card were you using in this build?
I was using a generic ATI Rage something from way back when.
Okay.
But I had a couple of Voodoo 2s that I put in there and just linked them up in SLI because, you know, if you have two, you might as well run two.
Right.
And believe it or not, it took like a long time to find appropriate drivers that would run on Windows 2000, which is not really a gaming OS, but it had the best support for the hardware. So I go and search one site and say, hey, here's your Windows 2000 drivers that got updated for 3DFX. So I download those and then they don't work. And then you get back out and you look again and say, oh, well, here's the refreshed ones that have this sort of a speed accelerator added to them. So I install those. Nope, they don't work. And believe it or not, I found an old, old driver, supposedly, that had a control panel built into it. And all of a sudden, everything worked.
Very nice.
I was able to get the Voodoo 2s installed. The base graphics didn't really matter because you're accelerating the game off of that. And these are all PCI cards and whatnot. And I basically played through the entire Quake 1, and streamed it on the YouTube channel, which was kind of fun. I think I had like 10 viewers. Where were you people at? But it was actually really fun. By broadcasting Quake 1, I actually played through the entire thing in an evening, which I didn't think that you could do. I mean, back when I was playing Quake in my dorm room, it would be like a couple hours every night sort of thing.
Well, yeah, but back in those days, we weren't used to the mechanics behind it. And now we're all kind of, you know, we've grown up with first-person shooters.
Yeah, well, and I would go and try to find the secrets because, you know, at the end of the level, it would let you know how many enemies you killed, how many secrets you found, how long did it take to make it through. And some of those maps were really big. So you would spend like an entire day just going through the map and trying to figure out where this was. And there was, on this recent playthrough, one of the last levels, it was confusing for some stupid reason. I spent like a half hour trying to go through this one map and I would keep getting sidetracked and going the wrong way and then randomly die for some stupid reason. Then have to start all over because you don't get a save. You just start over on the level.
Ah, those are the days.
Yeah, no achievements. Oh my gosh. But that got me thinking. So why did I go through the effort of setting up a Pentium Pro 200, aside from the Vault video and all that stuff, when I could actually play Quake through Steam?
Oh, that's right, because they offer a lot of those games on Steam still.
Yeah, and have you played Quake through Steam?
I can't say I have, but I've always had the disc.
Same here, actually. But when you download Quake, it's not a very big game, so it comes down pretty quick. And you fire it up, you are in software mode because it basically runs Quake in a DOS box and then allows you to play Quake the way that anybody would play Quake if they had no real computer hardware.
It doesn't sound like that would be fun at all, especially on a modern PC.
It's not. And actually, believe it or not, on my X99-based machine, playing Quake 1, performance-wise, it's not any better than playing Quake 1 on my Pentium Pro with two Voodoo 2s.
Oh, wow. That's a surprise.
But with the Voodoo 2s, I get all of the acceleration, all of the glows, the better textures. Oh, it's pretty. A much better gaming experience that you don't get if you play an old game through Steam because lowest common denominator and how do we make this run? But what's interesting is that all of the GL Quake and WinQuake, those front ends are in the download that you get from Steam. But you can't launch them. And if you could, you would need to have the OpenGL extension on your video card because that doesn't come with video cards anymore to get those effects in the game and get the faster speed and all that stuff. So it's like, I understand why they did it, but then I'm wondering, why did they do it?
So let me dial it back in here. Is it worth playing those games on Steam? Can you trick it into running those drivers or...
I so far have not figured out a way to do it. I like the idea of playing those games, and it's one that I've downloaded, and I'll just kind of slow roll it every once in a while, but it's not as fun. And like I've never played Half-Life, the original Half-Life.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, and that's one thing I want to do when I start setting up these old machines is play some of those old games the way that they're intended to be played, because a lot of games that supported 3DFX and OpenGL and whatnot, you lose a lot of the way that the game was intended if you're not playing it on the hardware that was designed for it at the time.
Well, it sounds like you may be headed to eBay to buy some retro gaming discs too.
Oh no, I know a guy. And I also have some of my discs from way back when, which is, you know, part of my pack rat nature. But now in retrospect, I'm kind of glad I have them.
Well, it's interesting that building an old PC requires you to jump through some software hoops too. I would have never guessed.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes at hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2021. Thanks for listening.